on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with a decorated World War II fighter pilot who logged an incredible 180 missions during the war in two separate tours. Originally from South Dakota, Ed Ellington lives in Seattle, Washington now. During World War II, his fellow pilots in the 57th Fighter Group knew him as Duke Ellington. His instrument was not the piano, but the P-40 Warhawk. And speaking of those fellow pilots, I know you had a lot of respect for him. What can you tell us about the kind of men that you were serving with?
Well, I think all of us just kind of did what we thought we were expected to do. I don't know that we had to go through any special mental adjustment. I suppose we did. I don't know. We were expected to do this work and get fly mission after mission and not get any damage. So it wasn't always extremely dangerous.
And how often would you guys be flying? Almost every day?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was almost every day. Yeah.
Did that wear you out?
No, I don't think so. You know, we're 20-plus years old and pretty solid youth. I can't say it wore us out.
Did you think you were invincible?
Oh, yeah. I had entertained some thoughts that you weren't going to get hit. Yeah. Yeah.
This is a question I ask a lot of people, and maybe it seems cliche, but I've heard every end of the spectrum on it. Were you ever scared over there? Did you ever think, you know, I might not make it back home?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's scared as hell. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What other answers do you get?
Oh, some people say, no, they never really were. They honestly never were. And then I have some guys that say, if anyone tells you he wasn't scared, he's a liar. So it runs the spectrum. So a lot of your missions also were escorting American and British bombers. Mm-hmm. And in that role of fighter escort, you guys dealt quite a bit with German fighter planes.
Yeah.
The ME-109s?
Yeah. The sadness of my whole story is that I didn't get one.
You didn't get to shoot one down.
Yeah. And I had some opportunities, but, you know, I have one leg that's longer than the other.
From birth?
Yeah. And I didn't know that until I got in the Army Air Corps, and they sort of mentioned it. But I found in my flying years that I unconsciously was pushing the right rudder more than the left rudder. I shouldn't have been pushing the left rudder at all. I was pushing the right rudder, which skewed the bullets. And I missed opportunities because I was missing the target.
How about that?
Yeah, well, and it's because, you know, now you're in an intense situation, and the right foot's going up there first, and you're shooting, and the bullets are screwing all over the place. And so I didn't get as many as I should have, or I didn't get any, but I should have got more than one.
And there's one particular, well, I know there's a lot of them that I want to hear about, but tell me about this one. I'm just, again, reading from some of the things you've written over the years. And this is when Major Art Salisbury led an attack mission designed to hit a German airstrip on the coast at El Daba just before daylight. So there's all this, you said there was anticipation and tension at extreme levels because you guys are taking off at night. And it was going to be a high adrenaline situation. You came in right on target. You surprised the Germans with their 109 still on the ground. But then those 109s got scrambled, got up in the air, and you're trying to fly away from there flat on the desert deck. And all of a sudden, you start hearing something in your headset.
Someone was saying, you've got a 109 on your tail or something to that effect. Turn left or break left or whatever it was.
But you look back, and there's nothing back there. So you look behind you, there wasn't there. And then they tell you again, ship flying straight ahead, turn, turn, turn. And then you looked up, and it was diving on you?
Yeah.
So what did you see when you looked up?
It just had to be the nose of a 109 coming in, coming down from the top.
Mm-hmm.
And a 109 is an unfriendly bird.
And he's got the angle on you. He's got speed coming straight down with you in his sights. If you don't do something, you're a goner.
I'm a goner.
So what'd you do?
Turn hard, hard left. I mean, that was our typical defense against German attack, was to pull as strong of a turn as you could because they couldn't follow us. Once we got away from them on a turn, they were done.
And you don't have much margin for error because you're already on the deck. I mean, you're barely above the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So you turn and you see his 20-millimeter shells hitting the ground right next to you. But then once you made that turn, you got away, thankfully.
Yeah.
And another note that you had about that incident was
that you lost two pilots that day. And that makes me wonder, what was that like when you would have a mission and you come back and you realize, hey, those guys took off with us, but they didn't make it back?
Well, you know, of course, they're friends of yours, and you have to hurt, but you can't live with it. I mean, you have to get it out of your system, even though maybe one of them or both of them are a classmate of yours. You're that close to the other people with you. You're very close. And when you lose one or two or whatever, it hurts. But you got to get it out of your system.
That's understandable. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to function.
No.
This is another thing I read about you. It said that, I guess this was in the Medanin, I guess it was. You said you were on the deck strafing, and you took some 20 millimeters in the wing, resulting in some huge holes. It says you broke for the coast, and you stayed on the deck again until you were certain you were behind friendly lines. When you cut in, you were well behind your own landing strip, but you came on a British P-40 resupply unit. And this is a great story, because you bring this plane in with all the holes in the wing, and the British guy says, "Yank, you've got a problem here."
Yeah.
That wasn't a British accent, but he said something to that effect.
Yeah,
huh?
That's exactly what he said. Yeah, Yank, you got a problem here.
Had you realized what poor condition your plane was in?
Oh, yeah. It flew poorly, very poorly, you know. It had big holes in that wing.
And holes in the gas tanks.
Yeah.
It was leaking gas. When you're flying that thing in, or were you concerned that, and you're flying over the sea, no less.
Yeah.
Are you mentally preparing for what you're going to do if you go in the water? I mean, what goes through your mind in a situation like that?
Oh, I don't think I'm thinking that far ahead, to tell you the truth. I just want to put it down where I think I'm going to make the best effort out of it.
So you made it there.
Made it.
But that plane with holes in the wings and gushing gas from ruptured gas tanks, it's not flyable. So that same guy who said you've got a problem, he asked you if you wanted another plane.
That's right. He asked me if I wanted another plane.
So, and typically, you're going to take off and land at an American base. In this case, you take your P-40, you fly this mission, you get all shot up, you land at a British base, the plane's not flyable, so they give you another plane.
You got the story right. I come in with a totally British-marked plane and park in my assigned parking space, and my crew chief jumps up on the and total mystery. He says, "How the hell did this happen? You go out in our plane and you come back in this one." It's always a mystery.
It's a magic act.
Yeah, the magic.
And they, at that point, I mean, you've been gone for a while.
Oh, yeah.
You weren't back on time. They probably thought you might not be coming back.
No, that was the mystery of it, see, because I was past due to be back.
Mm-hmm.
And then I come in with this strange airplane. And that was, what the hell's going on? You know?
Yeah, I'm sure there were some wide eyes on your base after that. Can you, because most of us have never and will never be in that position you were in. When you're in the air and there are enemy planes all around you, what does that feel like?
We're frequently intercepted by German 109s, and there would be a battle, and then it would end. Most of the time, in a close battle, we were winners. And then, of course, the other thing is, the Germans didn't have as much equipment as we had. They were hurting, so we had an advantage.
And you flew 116 missions in P-40s over there. What did you come to appreciate about that particular airplane?
It would take a lot of damage, for one thing I liked about it. It would take a lot of damage and still fly.
Again, something that I read here, you had an author that was asking you about a probable kill in March of 43, and you said, I don't really know what you're talking about, but you said that there was a situation where you're escorting medium bombers, you were attacked by 109s, it became one big melee with airplanes going every which way. You jumped on the tail of a diving 109 and followed him down through a few thousand feet, firing 50 caliber and watching a mass of tracers seemingly enter throughout the fuselage. You didn't see the airplane go down because you had to break off, so you couldn't make a claim that you shot it down. But that sure sounds like you shot one down.
Well, yeah, that's as close as I ever came, that right there. That describes my situation. I followed him down, shot him, but I never saw him hit the water. So I could say what I said, that was it.
One of the famous incidents in the air war in North Africa, which, again, a lot of people don't really even know happened. They think of the air war in Europe and in the Pacific, and they forget the Mediterranean had a lot happening, too. Yeah. There was something called the Palm Sunday Massacre.
Oh, my. Oh, God. That's the one you shouldn't ask me about.
You're still upset?
Oh, yeah. I'm still upset.
Tell me why.
Well, we got word that we were subject to an attack, so we flew. We just kept flying mission after mission. We didn't know what was going to happen. And I flew the mission before the attack. I think two before. I flew two missions before they actually showed up. Then I'm back on the ground, and our guys intercept him. Old Ed wasn't there. Of course, I went up afterwards. We did another mission, but there weren't any Germans there.
So you've been hearing for all this time, they're coming, they're coming, they're coming. You keep flying, they don't come. The one day you take off, they show up, and the Americans shoot most of them down.
Yeah, well, this is all in the same hours, all in the same hours. From we heard they were coming, and we went up, nothing. Land, refuel, back up again, nothing. The next time I'm on the ground, the guys beat them. There they are, an old Duke sitting on the ground.
So what you're talking about, I mean, there are so many planes in the sky. This is something where someone could become an ace in a day.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And you wanted that chance.
I wanted that chance.
In all those years of being disappointed that you missed out, have you ever thought, well, wait a second, maybe they would have gotten me?
No, I've never I never considered that.
That's not the way a fighter pilot thinks, huh?
No, I never considered that.
Well, I think that's important for the rest of us to understand. We're getting inside the brain of a decorated fighter pilot, a man with the Distinguished Flying Cross twice over, decorated also with the Silver Star. And you continue flying. You guys were flying all these missions in North Africa, and then you got a little action in Sicily.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Was that different? The missions that you had to fly over Sicily, were they different from what you did in North Africa?
No, most of it was dive bombing, of course, for ground targets. Most of what we did were ground targets. And now, I won't say regularly, because it didn't happen regularly, that the German Air Force would hit us. We pretty well ruined the German Air Force. Our biggest enemy was a ground fire, and they were damn good at that.
So you're flying a P-40 all this time, but we've talked about all the other American planes you had flown at one time or another. And here, when you're in the sky, your nemesis is the Messerschmitt, the ME-109. But you wanted to get in the cockpit of one of those and fly it?
I did.
Why?
Oh, it was the evidence of our enemy, the 109.
Yeah.
And I had to have one.
You just wanted to know what it felt like to be the other guy.
Yeah, well,
in that plane.
I just wanted to see what that airplane was like.
And you actually made that happen.
I made that happen.
Tell me how. How did you get yourself in the cockpit of an ME-109?
Well, I was the operations officer of the squadron, for one thing.
Yep, so you had rank.
Yeah, so the CO was a buddy of mine, so we didn't have any problem there.
So this is July 1943. The 8th Army is in the process of taking Sicily. And one German airfield was captured so quickly that the Luftwaffe didn't have time to destroy those aircraft. So here come a few functioning ME-109s that are left over, and one of them had your name on it, as far as you were concerned.
You know, it was just a quest that I just had to have.
Yeah, you couldn't think about anything else until you got that
ME-109. Yeah, got that 109.
Sure.
You got that little island. So the first thing I did is get over there with ahead of everybody else, find a 109, lay clay claim to it till I got my crew over there, and they put the thing together, and I flew it out of there.
What was that like? Was it different?
Wonderful. Wonderful. It was just, it felt like you just, a heavy accomplishment, is you got this damn one up, and you got it, and you're flying it.
Uh-huh.
It's a hell of a deal.
You'd never been in the cockpit of one of those before. I have to imagine the controls were different from your American planes.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Everything was different. First place, the throttle was on the right side. Most everything in the cockpit was different. The instruments mostly were similar, different locations. You had to get familiar with it a little bit. It wasn't hard to fly.
How far did you take it?
I brought it into our strip in Sicily, parked in my parking lot.
Again.
Yeah.
These strange planes keep showing up. Maybe this is a dumb question, but while you're flying that German plane with German markings, did you ever think, wait a second, I might be making myself a target here. What if somebody doesn't know it's me?
Well, that happened. I mean, this, but what when I got the crew up there to get me ready to fly the airplane, we painted stars on it.
Okay.
But that didn't make it an American airplane. We painted off the German markings. Well, yeah, it fooled people when I came landing in at our base with that damn 109. It was actually stupid because they were ready to shoot it down.
I was going to say, that's what I would have done.
Yeah, they're ready to shoot it down. I tried to minimize it by going up and down the runway a few times and shaking the wings.
So you waved to them, but you couldn't talk to them on the radio because it's a German plane.
No, I couldn't talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And so they were confused about that airplane. It had American markings on it. The guys go rocking the wings down the runway. And so, but they came damn close to shooting it.
Did you discover that later after talking
to them? Oh, yeah. The anti-aircraft was British.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they weren't to be fooled just because the markings were different. They saw that damn 109.
Well, I'm glad that we're sitting here talking.
Me too.
But I realize you missed your chance at history there. You could have been the only pilot in the whole war to be shot down as an American pilot flying a German plane shot down by British anti-aircraft.
I'm sorry. I have to apologize.
I'm glad that's some history you didn't make. Not long after that, you come back to the States.
Yeah.
The war's still going on. We're still 9 months away from D-Day. I mean, we're not even, the war isn't even really half over, but you've already flown 116 missions. So you come back to the States. Tell me what you did back home in America.
Well, I got assigned to the training command, of course.
But that would not last forever. When we come back, we're going to find out how 95-year-old Ed Ellington got back into flying combat missions. And the biggest reason, he's very thankful he did. Check out the photos on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.
You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. A sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.